could easily picture how that had worked. She'd seen Daniel's post-divorce bank account. She cleaned you out. Pretty much. Hence the ramen diet. That is a crime. She looked longingly at what was left of the butter cake. Life, he said. You've had your share of heartbreak. Honestly, though, it all went down with a little too much terror and tragedy. I was ready to quit anyway. It was never what I wanted to do with my life. It's just what I was really good at. She shrugged. The job took a toll. I can't even begin to imagine. But I meant romantically. She stared at him, uncomprehending. Romantically? Well, as you said, it ended in tragedy. My life, sure, but I just figured from the way you talk about him, it must have been devastating to lose Dr. Barnaby the way you did. You never said what his first name was? It was Joseph, but I always called him Barnaby. She took a sip of her juice. And were you in love with him from the very beginning? Her shocked gasp pulled a mouthful of juice into her lungs, and she spluttered and choked. Daniel jumped up and pounded her on the back while she tried to regain control of her breathing. After a minute, she waved him off. I'm okay, she coughed out. Sit. He stayed by her, one hand half extended. Are you sure? Just caught by surprise. With Barnaby? I thought you said yesterday. She took a deep breath, then coughed one more time. That I loved him. She shuddered. Sorry, I'm just having some seriously squicky incest reflexes right now. Barnaby was like my father. He was a good father, the only one I ever knew. It was really hard knowing how he died, and I miss him like hell. So yes, definitely devastating, but not like that. Daniel returned slowly to his seat. He thought for a moment, and then he asked, "Who else did you have to cut ties with when you disappeared?" She could imagine the long array of faces parading through his mind right now. That part wasn't so hard for me. It sounds pretty pathetic, but Barnaby was my only real friend. My work was my entire life, and I wasn't allowed to talk about my work to anyone besides Barnaby. I lived a very isolated existence. There were others around, for example, the underlings who prepped subjects. They knew what was happening in a general sense, but had none of the classified details about the information we were trying to retrieve, and, well, they were terrified of me. They knew what my job was, so we didn't chat much. There were a few lab assistants who performed a variety of duties outside the action rooms, but they didn't know what we were doing, and I had to be careful not to say anything to tip them off. Occasionally, people from the different agencies visited individually to monitor a particular interrogation, but I had very little contact with them, except to receive instructions about the angles I should cover. Mostly, they watched from behind one-way glass, and Karsten gave me the information. I used to think Karsten was sort of my friend, but he did just try to kill me, so I can't compare it to what you're losing. Obviously, I didn't have that much of a life to lose, even before I was recruited. I guess I just don't bond with other humans like a normal person. Like I said, pathetic. He smiled at her. I haven't noticed any deficiencies. Thanks. Well, it's getting late. Let me, help clear this all up. Sure. He stood and stretched, then started stacking plates. She had to move quickly to grab a few things before he had efficiently made off with all of it. But the night is still young, he continued, and I'm going to have to bring up the other half of our deal now. Huh? He laughed. His hands were full, so she pulled the dishwasher open. She filled in the bottom rack while he did the top and put the bigger pieces in the sink. The chore moved quickly with both of them working in easy tandem. You don't remember? It's only been a few days, really. I'll admit it does seem a lot longer. It could be weeks. I have no idea what you're talking about. He closed the dishwasher and then leaned back against the counter, folding his arms. She waited. Think back, before things got strange. You promised that if I still liked you after we had dinner together? He looked at her with raised eyebrows, waiting for her to fill in the blank. Oh, he was talking about their conversation on the train. She was shocked he could refer to it so lightly. That was the last moment his life had been normal. The last moment before everything had been stolen from him. And though she hadn't been the architect of that theft, she'd been the hand they used. Something about a foreign film theater at the university near you, right? Yes. Well, but I didn't mean for you to be quite so specific. The university theater is not exactly convenient right now. However, he opened the cupboard behind him, reached up, and pulled something off the highest shelf. He turned back to her with a huge grin and presented a DVD case. The faded cover had a picture of a beautiful woman in a red dress and a dark, wide-brimmed hat. "Ta-da," he said. "Where on earth did you get that?" His smile got a little smaller. "Second store I went to. Thrift store. I got very lucky. This is actually a great movie." He assessed her face. "I can read your thoughts. You're thinking, is there any place this idiot didn't go? We'll be dead by sunrise." "Not in so many words, and we'd be disappearing into the night in Arnie's stolen truck right now if I thought it was that bad. Still, while I'm very, very sorry for my rash behavior, I'm also quite happy I was able to find this gem. You'll love it." She shook her head, not disagreeing, just wondering how things had gotten so odd in her life. One wrong move, and suddenly she was committed to reading subtitles with the most kind and uncorrupted person she'd ever met. He stepped toward her. "You can't say no. You made a bargain, and I intend to hold you to it." "I'll do it, I'll do it. You just have to explain why exactly it is that you still like me," she said, finishing more glumly than she'd begun. "I think I can do that." He took another step forward, backing her against the island. He put his hands on the edge of the counter behind her, one on either side, and as he leaned forward, she could smell the clean, citrusy scent of his hair. He was so close, she could see that he must have shaved recently. His jaw was smooth, and there was the hint of razor burn just under his chin. Daniel's proximity confused her, but it didn't frighten her the way it would have with just about any other person on the planet. He wasn't dangerous to her, she knew that. She didn't understand what he was doing, though, even when he slowly lowered his face toward hers, his eyes starting to close. It never occurred to her that he was about to kiss her until his half-open lips were just a breath away from hers. That realization startled her. It startled her a lot. And when she was startled, she had ingrained reactions that manifested without her conscious approval. She ducked under his arm, spinning free. She dashed several feet away, then spun back to face the source of the alarm, sliding into a half-crouch. Her hands were automatically at her waist, looking for the belt she wasn't wearing. As she took in Daniel's horrified expression, Alex realized that her reaction would have fit better if he'd pulled a knife and held it to her throat. She straightened up and dropped her hands, her face burning. Sorry. You caught me off guard." Daniel's horror shifted into disbelief. "Wow. I didn't think I was moving that fast, but maybe I should reevaluate."
I'm sorry. What was that?"
A shade of impatience crossed his expression.
"Well, I was about to kiss you."
"That's what it looked like, but why? I mean, kiss me? I don't understand." He shook his head and turned to lean back against the island.
"Huh. I really thought we were on the same page, but now I kind of feel like I'm speaking English as a second language. What did you think was going on here? With the dinner date? And the sad little candle?"
He gestured to the table. He walked toward her then, and she forced herself not to back away. Confusion aside, she knew her wild overreaction had been rude. She didn't want to hurt his feelings, even if he was a crazy person.
"Surely," he sighed. "Surely, you've been aware of how often I just touch you."
He was close enough at that point to reach out one hand and brush his knuckles along her arm in demonstration.
"On the planet I come from, that kind of thing signifies romantic interest."
He leaned toward her again, his eyes narrowed.
"Please, tell me, what does it mean on yours?"
She took a deep breath. "Daniel,
What you're processing now is a kind of sensory deprivation reaction, she explained. It's something I've seen before in the lab. His eyes widened. He backed out of her space. His expression was totally flummoxed. This is a valid response to what you've experienced, and it's actually a very mild response under the circumstances, she continued. You're doing remarkably well. Many people would have had a complete nervous breakdown by this point. This emotional reaction might seem similar to something you've experienced before, but I can assure you that what you're feeling right now is not romantic interest. He regained his composure as she explained, but he didn't seem enlightened or reassured by her diagnosis. His eyebrows lowered and his lips tucked in at the corners like he was annoyed.
And you're sure you know my feelings better than I do because...
As I said, I've seen something like this before in the lab.
Something like this, he quoted back at her.
I imagine you saw many things in your lab, but I'm also sure that I'm still the best qualified to know when I'm experiencing romantic interest. He sounded angry, but he was smiling, and he was moving closer while he spoke.
So if your only argument is anecdotal?
That's not my only argument, she began slowly, unwillingly. These weren't the easiest words to say. I may have been absorbed by my work, but I wasn't totally oblivious. I know what men see when they look at me, the ones who know what I am, like you do. And I understand that reaction. I don't disagree with it. Your brother's animosity, that is a normal, rational response. I've seen it many times before. Fear, loathing, and eagerness to assert physical dominance. I am the boogeyman in a very dark and scary world. I frighten people who aren't afraid of anything else, not even death. I can take everything they pride themselves on away from them. I can make them betray everything they hold sacred. I am the monster they see in their nightmares. It was a version of herself she'd come to accept, but not without some pain. She wasn't aware that outsiders, people who didn't know her, saw her as a woman rather than a demon. When she needed to, she could make use of her ability to appear delicate and feminine, as she had with the Walrusy hotel manager. It was no different from her ability to look like a boy. Both were deceptions. But even those outsiders who saw her as a female didn't look at her with desire. She wasn't that girl, and that was okay. She'd been born with her own gifts, and you didn't get everything. He waited patiently while she spoke, his expression neutral. She didn't think he was reacting to her words strongly enough. Do you understand what I'm saying? She asked. I am intrinsically incompatible with being an object of romantic interest.
I understand you. I just don't agree.
I don't understand how you, of all people, can disagree.
First, but not entirely to the point, I'm not afraid of you.
She exhaled impatiently. Why not?
Because now that you know who I am in no danger from you, and I never will be, unless I change into the kind of person who should be.
Her lips screwed into a half-pursed frown. He was right, but that wasn't really the issue.
Second, still tangential, I think you've been spending all your time with the wrong kind of man. A hazard of your particular work, I'd imagine.
Maybe, but what is the main point you're dancing around? He got into her personal space again.
How I feel. How you feel.
She held her ground. And how can you be sure what you're feeling? You're in the middle of the most traumatic experience of your life. You've just lost your whole world. All that's left is a brother you don't completely trust, your kidnapper slash torturer, and Arnie. So it was probably 50-50 on whether you'd attach yourself to me or to Arnie. This is pretty basic Stockholm Syndrome stuff, Daniel. I'm the only human female in your life. There aren't any other options. Think about it rationally. Think about how inappropriate the timing is. You can't trust feelings born in the midst of severe physical and mental anguish.
I might consider that, except for one thing.
And what's that?
I wanted you before you were the only human female in my life.
This threw her, and he took advantage, placing both his hands lightly on her shoulders. The warmth from his palms made her realize that she'd been cold without recognizing it. She shivered.
Remember when I told you that I'd never asked a woman out on a train before? That was kind of an understatement. On average, it takes me about 3 weeks of fairly regular interaction, along with an embarrassing amount of encouragement from the girl, before I work up the nerve to ask someone to go for a casual coffee. But from the second I saw your face, I was willing to leap miles outside my comfort zone to make sure I saw it again.
She shook her head. Daniel, I roofied you. You were high on a chemical compound with manifestations similar to ecstasy.
Not then I wasn't. I remember. I felt the difference before and after you shocked me. That was when things got confusing, and before the drug, I was already in neck deep. I was trying to figure out how I was going to get off at your stop without looking like a stalker.
She had no answer. His physical proximity was becoming disorienting. He still held her loosely, bending in slightly so that his face was closer to hers. It wasn't until this moment that she began to really consider his words. She'd written off everything he'd said and done since the kidnapping as aftershocks from the trauma. She'd analyzed him like a subject, always separating herself from the equation. Because none of it was about her, and all of it was within normal parameters for what he'd been through. She tried to remember the last time a man had looked at her this way, and she came up empty. For the past 3 years, every person she'd met, male or female, had been a potential source of danger. For the 6 years before that, as she just excruciatingly explained, she'd been anathema to every man she'd interacted with, which took her all the way back to college and medical school and the few brief relationships that had never included much romance. She was a scientist first, even then, and the men she'd formed attachments to had been the same. Their relationships were born from massive amounts of time logged in together and very specific interests that 99.99% of the population couldn't begin to grasp. Each time, they'd settled for each other by default. No wonder it had never amounted to much. And none of them had ever worn this expression. Wonder and fascination mixed with something electric as he gazed at her face. Her battered, swollen face. For the first time, she felt mortified about her mangled appearance for an entirely vain reason. Her hands had been hanging limply at her sides. Now she raised one and covered as much as she could, hiding like a child.
"I've put some thought into this," he said,
and she could hear the smile in his voice.
"I know what I'm saying."
She just shook her head.
"Of course, all of that is moot if you don't feel a similar way. I've been a little overconfident tonight."
He paused.
"Given that we haven't been speaking the same language at all, have we? I've been misreading you."
He paused again like he was waiting for an answer, but she had no idea what to say.
"What do you see when you look at me?" he asked.
She lowered her hand an inch and glanced up at him, at the same perplexing, honest face she'd been trying to understand from the beginning. What kind of a question was that? There were too many answers. "I don't know how to respond to that." His eyes narrowed for a moment, considering. She wished he would take a step back so that she could think more clearly. Then he seemed to brace himself, squaring his shoulders for some kind of blow.
"Might as well get everything out in the open. Answer this instead. What's the very worst thing you see when you look at me?"
The honest answer popped out before she could think it through. "A liability." She saw how harshly the word landed. Now he gave her the space she'd just wished for, and she regretted it. Why was the room so cold?
He nodded to himself as he backed away. "That's fair. That's completely fair. I'm an idiot, clearly. I can't forget I've put you in danger. Also the fact that I'm..."
"No!" She took a hesitant step toward him, anxious to be clear. "That's not what I meant."
"You don't have to be kind. I know I'm useless in all this."
He gestured vaguely toward the door,
toward the world outside that was trying to kill them both. You're not. Being a normal person is not a bad thing. You'll learn all the rest. I was talking about leverage. She couldn't help herself. His expression was just so openly devastated. She took another step toward him and grabbed one of his big, warm hands with both of her little icy ones. It made her feel better when the word leverage replaced the pain in his eyes with confusion. She hurried to explain. You remember what Kevin and I were saying about leverage? About how you're the leverage the agency needed to get him to expose himself?
Yes. That makes me feel so much better than useless.
Let me finish. She took a deep breath. They've never had anything on me. Barnaby was my only family. I didn't have some sister with a couple of kids and a house in the suburbs that the department could threaten to blow up. There was no one I cared about. Lonely, yes, but I was also free. It was only myself I had to keep alive. She watched him think through the words, trying to sort out her meaning. She fumbled for a concrete example. See, if they had you, she explained slowly, if they grabbed you somehow, I would have to come after you. It was so true, it frightened her. She didn't understand why it was true, but that didn't change the fact. His eyes widened and seemed to freeze that way. And they'd win, you know, she said apologetically. They'd kill us both, but that doesn't mean I wouldn't have to try, see? She shrugged. Liability. He opened his mouth to speak, then shut it again. He paced to the sink, then back to stand right in front of her.
Why would you come after me? Guilt?
Some, she admitted.
But it wasn't you who involved me. Not really. They didn't choose me because of you.
I know. That's why I said some. Maybe 33%. He smiled a tiny bit, like she'd said something funny.
And the other 67%?
Another 33% justice? That's not the right word, but someone like you, you deserve more than this. You're a better person than any of them. It's not right that someone like you should have to be a part of this world. It's an evil waste. She hadn't meant to be quite so vehement. She could tell she'd only confused him again. He didn't realize how unusual he was. He didn't belong down here in the filth of the trenches. Something about him was just pure.
And the last 34? He asked after a moment of thought.
I don't know, she groaned. She didn't know why or how he had become a central figure in her life. She didn't know why she automatically assumed he would be there in the future when that made no sense at all. She didn't know why, when his brother had asked her to keep an eye on him, her answer had been so earnest and so compulsory. Daniel was waiting for more. She spread her hands helplessly. She didn't know what else to say. He smiled a little.
Well, liability doesn't seem such an awful word as it did before.
It does to me.
You know, if they came for you, I would do what I could to stand in their way. So you're a liability for me, too.
I wouldn't want you to do that.
Because we'd both end up dead.
Yes, we would. If they come for me, you run. He laughed.
Agree to disagree.
Daniel,
let me tell you what else I see when I look at you.
Her shoulders hunched automatically. Tell me the worst thing you see. He sighed, then reached out to gently lay his fingertips along her cheekbone.
These bruises, they break my heart. But in a really twisted and wrong way, I'm sort of grateful for them. How shameful is that?
Grateful?
Well, if my idiot bully of a brother hadn't beaten you up, you would have disappeared, and I would have had no way to ever find you again. Because of your injuries, you needed our help. You stayed with me.
His expression when he said the last four words was very unsettling. Or maybe it was his fingers lingering on her skin.
Now can I tell you what else I see?
She stared at him warily.
I see a woman who is more real than any other woman I've ever met. You make
every other person I've known seem insubstantial, somehow incomplete, like shadows and illusions. I loved my wife, or rather, as you so insightfully pointed out while I was high, I loved my idea of who she was. I truly did. But she was never as there to me as you are. I've never been drawn to someone the way I am to you, and I have been from the very first moment I met you. It's like the difference between reading about gravity and then falling for the first time.
They stared at each other for what felt like hours, but could have been minutes or even seconds. His hand, at first just touching her cheekbone with the very tips of his fingers, slowly relaxed down until his palm was cradling her jaw. His thumb brushed across her lower lip with a pressure so light she wasn't totally sure she hadn't imagined it. "This is entirely irrational on every level," she whispered.
"Don't kill me, please."
She might have nodded. He put his other hand on her face, so softly that despite her bruises there was no hint of pain. It was just live current, like the way a plasma globe must feel from the inside. She started to remind herself, as his lips pressed gently against hers, that she was not 13 years old, and this was not her first kiss, so really... Then his hands moved into her hair and held her mouth more firmly against his. His lips opened, and she couldn't even finish the thought. She couldn't think how the words were supposed to string together. She gasped, just a tiny puff of breath, and he pulled his face an inch back, still holding her head secure in his long hands.
"Did I hurt you?"
She couldn't remember how to say, "Just keep kissing me." So instead, she stretched up on her tiptoes to throw her arms around his neck and pull him closer. He was not unwilling to comply. He must have felt the drag in her arms, or his back was protesting the considerable difference in their heights. He grabbed her waist and swung her up onto the island counter, never breaking the contact between their lips. Reflexively, her legs wrapped around his hips at the same time that his arms pulled tight around her torso, so their bodies were warmly fused together. Her fingers twisted themselves into his hair, and she was finally able to admit to herself that she had always been attracted to these unruly curls, that she'd secretly enjoyed running her fingers through them while he was unconscious, in a way that was totally unprofessional. There was something honest, and so Daniel about the kiss, as if his personality, along with his scent and taste, was a part of the electricity humming back and forth between them. She started to understand what he'd been saying before, about how she was real to him. He was something new to her, an entirely new experience. It was like her first kiss, because no kiss had ever been so vivid, so much stronger than her own analytical mind. She didn't have to think. It felt amazing not to think. Everything was just kissing Daniel, like there had never been another purpose for breathing in and out. He kissed her throat, her temple, the top of her head. He cradled her face against his neck and sighed.
"It feels like I've been waiting a century to do that. It's like time has lost all continuity. Every second with you outweighs days of life before I met you."
"This shouldn't be so easy." Once he'd stopped kissing her, she could think again. She wished she didn't have to. He tilted her chin up.
"What do you mean?"
"Shouldn't there be some awkwardness? Noses bumping? All that? I mean, it's been a while for me, but that's how I remember it." He kissed her nose.
"Normally, yes, but this hasn't been a normal thing in any facet."
"I don't understand how this could happen. The odds are astronomically against it. You were just the random bait they put in a trap for me, and then, coincidentally, you just happened to be exactly..." She didn't know how to finish.
"Exactly what I want," he said,
and he leaned in to kiss her again. He pulled back too soon.
"I'll admit," he continued, "it's not a bet I would have taken."
your chances at winning the lottery would be better.
Do you believe in fate?
Of course not. He laughed at her scornful tone.
I guess karma is out too, then?
Neither of those things is real.
Can you prove that?
Well, not conclusively, no, but no one can prove they are real either.
Then you'll just have to accept that this is the world's most unlikely coincidence. I, however, think there is some balance in the universe. We've both been treated unfairly. Maybe this is our balance.
It's irrational. He cut her off, his lips making her forget instantly what she had been about to say. He kissed along the skin of her cheekbone till he got to her ear.
Rationality is overrated,
he whispered. Then his mouth was moving with hers again, and she couldn't help but agree. This was better than logic.
You're not off the hook for Indochine,
he murmured.
Huh? The movie. I endangered our lives to acquire it. The least you can do is...
This time, she didn't let him finish.
Tomorrow,
he said, when they came up for air. Tomorrow, she agreed.
Chapter 16. Alex woke up the next day feeling both full of anticipation and also very, very stupid. Honestly, it was like she couldn't complete a solid paragraph of thought without going back to some piece of Daniel's face, or the texture of his hands, or the way his breath felt against her throat. And of course, that was where the feeling of anticipation was coming from. But there were so many practical matters that simply had to be considered. Last night, or rather this morning, by the time he'd kissed her goodnight for the 100th time at the top of the stairs, she'd been too exhausted to think through any of it. She'd barely had the energy to arm her defenses and slip on her gas mask before she passed out. It was probably a good thing. She'd been too addled then to grasp exactly what madness she'd just embarked on. Even now, it was hard to focus on anything but the fact that Daniel was probably awake somewhere. She was impatient to see him again, and yet also a little frightened. What if the crazy swell of emotion that had felt so natural and irresistible last night had evaporated? What if they were suddenly strangers again with nothing to say? That might be easier than if the feeling continued. Today or tomorrow, or perhaps the next day, Kevin was going to call. Ugh, Kevin. She could just imagine his reaction to recent developments. She shook her head. That was irrelevant, because today or tomorrow, Kevin was going to call and then she would send the email that would make the rats scurry. Kevin would compile a list of names, he would go after his rats, and if she didn't act simultaneously, her rats would go to ground once they realized the danger. So she would have to leave Daniel here and embark on her retaliatory strike, knowing full well that there was a good chance she wouldn't be coming back. How would she explain that? How long did she have? 2 days at most? What truly hideous timing. It didn't feel right to go into the day anticipating all the hours together with Daniel. It was dishonest. He'd heard the plan, but she was positive he hadn't thought it through enough to realize what it meant. So soon, she'd be leaving him here alone. Their time would be much better spent training him in the art of hiding. Some more shooting range practice wouldn't hurt either. The feeling of anticipation turned to a sinking dread as her thoughts wound to a conclusion. Her behavior last night had been irresponsible. If she'd had any idea of what Daniel was thinking, she might have been able to work all this through before it had gotten out of hand. She might have been able to keep the appropriate distance between them, but she'd been taken completely by surprise. Trying to understand a normal person was not her forte. Though truly, someone who found the real Alex attractive was not a normal person at all. She heard barking outside. It sounded like the dogs were coming back from the barn. She wondered if it was still morning or already afternoon. She grabbed a set of clean clothes, disarmed the door, and snuck to the bathroom. She didn't want to see Daniel until her teeth were brushed, which was stupid. She couldn't be allowed to kiss him again. That wouldn't be kind to either of them. The hall was dark, the bathroom empty. The door to Daniel's room was open, and the room beyond was empty, too. She ran through her ablutions quickly, trying not to spend too long at the mirror, wishing her face were further along the road to healing. Her lips were worse than yesterday, swollen again, but that was her own fault. The superglue had fallen off in her sleep, and the darker welt down the center of her bottom lip showed some promise of changing the shape of her mouth permanently. She heard the TV on as she came down the stairs. When she walked into the big front room, she saw Daniel bending over the console beneath the flat screen. The front door was open, a warm breeze blowing in through the screen. It ruffled the curls on the back of his head. He was grumbling to himself.
Why does anyone need 5 different input options?
He ran a hand through the hair that was falling into his eyes.
It's a DVD. I'm not trying to launch the space shuttle.
His Danielness stopped her where she stood, and a wave of cowardice made her want to turn around and sneak back upstairs. How would she tell him the things she needed to say? The thought of making him unhappy was suddenly more repugnant than she had been prepared for. Lola yelped from outside the front door, looking hopefully through the screen at her. Daniel spun around, and when he caught sight of Alex, a huge grin lit his face. He was across the room in 4 long strides, and then he lifted her up in an exuberant bear hug.
"You're up," he said excitedly. "Are you hungry? I've got everything for omelets."
"No," she said, trying to extricate herself. At the same time, her stomach growled. He put her down and stared at her with raised eyebrows. "I mean, yes," she admitted. "But first, can we talk for a second, please?" He sighed.
"I thought you might wake in an analytical mood. Just one thing before you start."
She wanted to duck away. The guilt was very strong, but it wasn't as strong as her need to kiss him back. She didn't know if she would get another chance. It was a very gentle kiss, soft and slow. He'd noticed the condition of her lips. When he broke away, him, not her, it was like she had no self-control at all. It was her turn to sigh. He let his arms fall, but took her hand as he led her to the couch. Little zings of electricity buzzed up her arm, and she silently castigated herself for being such a sucker. So what if this was the first time he'd held her hand? She had to get a grip. Lola yelped again, hopefully, when she saw Alex nearing the door. Alex shot her one apologetic look. Khan and Einstein were both curled up on the porch behind her, Khan creating a massive boulder of fur. Daniel grabbed the remote out of his way, muting the TV before dropping it onto the ground. He pulled her down next to him, keeping her hand. He was still smiling.
"Let me guess. You think we're being unwise," he said.
"Well, yes."
"Because it's impossible that we could really be compatible, given the genesis of our relationship. I'll concede it wasn't exactly a Hollywood meet-cute."
"It's not that." She looked down at his hand. It entirely engulfed hers. Maybe she was wrong. Maybe this whole retribution scheme was poorly thought out. There was nothing to stop her from running again. She could make back the money she'd lost. She could go to Chicago, work things out with Joey Giancardi, be a mob doctor again. Maybe given what she now knew about the plan to eliminate her, the family could actually offer her some protection. Or she could just work a counter at a backwoods diner and live without the extras, like tryptamines and opioids and booby traps. Who knew how long the IDs she already had might last if she kept her head down?
"Alex?"
he asked. "I'm just thinking about the future."
"Our long-term compatibility?"
he guessed. "No, not long-term. I was thinking about what happens tonight, or tomorrow." She finally looked up at him. His soft gray-green eyes were just a little confused, not troubled, yet. "Your brother will call soon." He made a face.
"Well, I hadn't thought about that."
He shuddered.
"I guess it's better to mention this casually over the phone. By the way, Kev, I've fallen in love with Alex, then in person, right?"
She disapproved entirely of the tingles that snapped through her nervous system when he made his facetious practice announcement. That wasn't a word to bandy around casually.
He shouldn't have used it. But still, the tingles. That's not the part I was worrying about. You remember the plan.
Once he's in position, we send the email. He watches who reacts. Then we meet up with him and...
He trailed off, his brows suddenly furrowing.
Then you both are going to... What's the phrase? Take them out, right? That's going to be very dangerous, isn't it? Couldn't we just let Kevin handle things alone? Seems like he probably wouldn't mind. I get the sense he liked his job.
That wasn't our deal. And, Daniel.
What?
His voice was harder now, with an edge. He was beginning to understand. Neither Kevin nor I will be able to, well, perform at our best if the leverage they have against us is in the same place the bad guys are. There was almost a physical weight to the meaning of her words as they dropped, an aftershock in the silence that followed. He stared at her, unblinking, for a long moment. She waited.
Are you joking?
He finally asked. His voice wasn't much more than a whisper.
Do you think I'm really going to let you leave me here to twiddle my thumbs while you risk your life?
No. And yes, you are.
Alex, I know how to take care of myself. I know that, but I just can't wrap my mind around it. How will I stand it? Waiting here, not knowing. Alex, I'm serious.
His voice turned impatient at the end. She wasn't looking at him. She was staring straight ahead at the television.
Alex, turn up the volume. Now.
He glanced at the TV, froze for one brief second, then jumped up and fumbled on the floor for the remote. He jammed a few wrong keys before the newscaster's voice thundered through the surround sound speakers.
Missing since last Thursday when police believe he was abducted from the high school where he teaches. A substantial reward is being offered for information leading to his recovery. If you've seen this man, please call the number below.
On the large screen, Daniel's face was blown up to 4 times its actual size. It was a snapshot, rather than an official portrait from the yearbook. He was outside somewhere sunny, smiling widely, his hair tousled and damp from sweat. His arms were stretched over the shoulders of 2 shorter people whose faces were cropped out of the image. It was a very good picture of him, both attractive and engaging. He looked like the kind of person you would want to help. An 800 number was printed in bright red across the bottom of the screen. The picture disappeared, replaced by a handsomely aging anchorman and a much younger, perky blonde anchorwoman.
That's a shame, Brian. Let's hope they get him back home to his family soon. Now we'll take a look at the weather with Marceline. How are things looking for the rest of the week, Marcy?
The picture moved to a sultry brunette standing in front of a digital map of the entire country.
This is national news, Alex whispered. Her mind started working through the scenarios.
Daniel muted the sound.
The school must have called the police, Daniel said. She just looked at him.
What? Daniel, do you know how many people go missing every day?
Oh, their pictures don't all end up on the news, do they?
Especially not full-grown men who've only been missing a few days. She got up and started pacing.
They're trying to flush you out.
What does that mean? Where are they going with this? Do they think Kevin killed me? Or do they think I figured out the truth and took off with you? Why would they think I'd take you with me? It has to be about Kevin. It is his face, too. They must think I lost, right? This new spot would be easier for the CIA to arrange than for my department. Of course, if they're working together...
Will Kevin see this? Daniel worried. He's right there in D.C.
Kevin's not showing his face, regardless. She paced for another minute, then went to sit with Daniel again. She curled her legs under her and took his hand.
Daniel, who did you talk to yesterday?
His color heightened.
I told you, I didn't speak to anyone but the people at the counter.
I know, but who were they? Male, female, old, young?
The checker at the grocery store was a guy, older, maybe 50, Hispanic.
Was the store busy?
A little. He was the only checker.
There were three people in line behind me.
That's good.
The dollar store was small. It was just me. But the woman at the counter had a TV on. She was watching a game show. She didn't look up much.
How old was she?
Older than the first guy. White hair.
Why?
Older people watch more news, don't they?
She shrugged.
Possibly.
The third?
Just graduated, I guess. I remember wondering if school was out before I realized she worked there.
Her stomach felt suddenly heavier.
A young girl? And she was friendly. Very friendly.
It wasn't a question.
Yes. How did you know?
She sighed. Daniel, you're an attractive man.
I'm ordinary at best, and I'm a decade too old for a girl that age, he protested.
Old enough to be intriguing. Look, it doesn't matter. We'll do the few things we can. You stop shaving as of now, and we lie not just low, but flat. Aside from that, all we can do is hope the girl's not a news watcher, and that they don't run any pieces on whatever social media kids are using right now.
Would they? If they think of it.
They're throwing Hail Marys.
He dropped his head into his free hand.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We've all made mistakes on this little endeavor.
You haven't. You're trying to make me feel better.
I've made several major errors in the past few weeks.
He looked up, disbelieving.
One, I didn't just ignore Karsten's email in the first place. Two, I fell for the trap. Three, I missed your tracker. Four, I didn't arm the ceiling in the barn. And then Kevin made the mistake of taking off his gas mask. I guess that's the only one I can think of for him, except for not having transport out.
Bummer. I guess he wins that round.
Well, he also did something wrong in the beginning, or the CIA would have bought that he was dead.
Good point. Thanks.
Arnie, though, he said sadly. Arnie's still batting 1,000.
Don't you just hate those insufferable perfectionists?
Daniel laughed.
So much.
The humor left his face.
But I don't think you made so many mistakes. I mean, I guess when it comes to what's best for you, yes, but for me, well, I'm glad you fell for it.
She gave him a sardonic look.
That's taking romance a little too far, don't you think?
She wished she could completely excise the memory of their first night together, with a scalpel, if necessary.
She wished those images weren't so clear and sharp in her mind. The tendons standing out in his neck, the sound of his muffled screams.
She shuddered, wondering how long it would take until they faded.
I'm serious. If it wasn't you, they would have sent someone else for me. And if that person had gotten the best of Kevin, whoever it was would have killed me right then, wouldn't he?
She looked into his earnest eyes, and then shuddered again.
You're right.
He stared back for a long moment, then sighed.
So what do we do now?
Alex frowned.
Well, our options are limited. My face still isn't ready for scrutiny, but it's now better than yours.
So we can stay here and keep our heads down, or we could go north.
I have a place. It's not as fancy as this one or as well protected. I don't have a bat cave.
The jealousy in her voice on the last line was unconcealed.
So you think it's safer here?
It depends. I'd like to get Arnie's thoughts about the town before we decide. Kevin's take wouldn't hurt either. Hopefully he'll call soon. The plans have changed a little. I think he's going to get his wish. He gets to be the victor after all.
The day dragged. Alex didn't want to leave the television. It didn't change things much, knowing how many times they aired the piece and how many outlets picked it up, but she still had to watch.
Arnie took the new situation with the stoicism she expected, only the tightening of his eyes betraying his worry.
Alex wanted to send Arnie to the Batcave with a list of everything she needed. She'd love to have the SIG for herself, plus extra ammo, and for Daniel, the sawed-off shotgun that she'd seen in Kevin's stash. A sniper rifle wasn't as helpful in close quarters as a shotgun would be. It could incapacitate multiple attackers with one load of buckshot. She also wanted to hunt for gas masks. She couldn't wire up the house if she didn't have a third for Arnie. She doubted Kevin would have overlooked such an obvious safety feature, but then again, maybe it was obvious only to someone like her. In his world, Kevin probably only worried about bullets and bombs.
But though she wanted these things badly, it might already be too late for preparations. If the flirtatious checker had called after the first broadcast, which could have aired earlier in the day than the one they'd seen, or even the day before, it would take a certain amount of time for their enemies to begin the search. Someone had to get here, then ask questions around town, and finally start investigating possible leads. But then, if that someone had good luck, the surveillance would begin. And she had no way of knowing if it already had. Even though she and Daniel were staying inside with the windows covered, someone could be watching Arnie right now. If Arnie took a field trip to the Batcave, the Watcher would follow. At that point, they might as well put up a banner that read, "Congratulations, you found the right place. Help yourself to a few rocket launchers." They could do nothing that might give away the existence of the Batcave. Her most essential defenses were in easy reach. Everything of importance loaded into her backpack, neatly ziplocked by category, for a quick retreat. She had Arnie move the truck to the back of the house, close enough to Arnie's bedroom window that they could be in the front cab with one well-hidden step. She wished Kevin would call, or that he'd trusted them enough to give Daniel the number to his own burner phone, in case of emergency. There might be additional safeties he'd built into the place that Arnie wasn't aware of. Daniel made dinner for the three of them, and though it wasn't as high-spirited an affair as the previous nights, it was still delicious. She told him to slow down with his stock of ingredients. It might be a while before shopping was on the agenda again, even for Arnie. It surprised her how unaware Daniel seemed to be of Arnie's presence. Well, not unaware exactly, just unaffected. Not that he was rude to Arnie or ignored him, but Daniel made no effort to hide his new closeness with Alex in front of him. Twice he took her hand. Once he kissed the top of her head as he passed with the dishes. Arnie, unsurprisingly, showed no reaction to Daniel's exhibition, but she couldn't help but wonder what he thought of it. Arnie told them he had the dogs on rotation to run the perimeter fence, all 6 miles of it, while it was light out, the time when scouts would be watching through binoculars. If anyone was perched close enough to watch the house, the dogs would alert him. After that announcement, he went to bed early, keeping his normal routine. Alex and Daniel stayed up to watch the evening news. He curled around her on the sofa so naturally that it didn't feel out of the ordinary at all. She couldn't remember feeling so physically comfortable with anyone in all her life. Even her mother had been a brittle hugger, someone who rarely expressed affection, in words or actions. Alex's closeness with Barnaby was verbal, never physical. So she thought that she should feel awkward and embarrassed with her legs draped across another person's lap, her head cradled against that person's shoulder while his arms were wrapped around her. But she felt only oddly relaxed, as if his proximity somehow removed a portion of the stress from the situation. The Daniel piece played again, but it ran later in the program than before, and she could tell the night anchor was bored by the story. The agency might be able to force this bit into the news for a short time, but they couldn't keep the networks from reacting to what a non-story it was. Of course, there was the obvious second act. "I should probably warn you if you haven't thought of it already," she said. He tried to sound glib, but she could hear the wariness.
"I'm sure I haven't."
"Well, if this story doesn't get results quickly, they'll have to up the ante to keep the press working for them."
"What does that mean, up the ante?"
She leaned back so she could see his face, her nose wrinkling in distaste at what she had to say. "They'll make the story more salacious somehow. Say you're suspected of a crime. Invent a student who you abducted or abused. Something along those lines, probably. They could be more creative, though." His eyes shifted from her face back to the television screen, though the announcer had moved on to early primary predictions. He flushed, then went pale. She let him take his time with the idea. She could imagine how hard it would be for a good man to realize he was about to become a villain.
"There's nothing I can do about it," he said quietly. It was not quite a question.
"No."
"At least my parents aren't around to see it. Maybe I don't think all my friends will believe it."
"I wouldn't," she agreed. He smiled down at her.
At one point in the not-too-distant past, you thought I was going to murder a couple million people.
I didn't know you then.
True.
When the late news was done, they engaged in a more subdued goodnight. Then she began the cleanup. They might have to leave quickly. She dismantled and stowed her lab, then changed into leggings and a black t-shirt. Things she would be comfortable in if tonight was the night they had to run. She knew she was tired, but her brain couldn't seem to slow down. She didn't want to miss anything else. Daniel might be right. Perhaps her first big mistakes were actually good things, and that they might have saved his life. But she couldn't afford any more errors. It wasn't just her own life at stake now. She sighed to herself. There were benefits to having a liability, but the load was definitely much heavier. A quiet knock interrupted her thoughts.
"Don't open the door," she cautioned quickly, jerking upright. The cot rocked underneath her. After a short pause, Daniel asked, "Are you wearing a gas mask?"
"Yes."
"I thought so. Your voice sounds muffled."
Another pause.
"Is your security system terribly difficult to disarm?"
he wondered. "Give me a minute." It took less than that to secure the live wires. She pushed her mask back onto the top of her head and opened the door. He was leaning against the frame. She couldn't see him perfectly in the darkness, but she thought he looked tired and sad.
"You're very worried,"
he inferred, reaching to touch her mask lightly. "Actually, I always sleep with this. It feels weird if I don't have it on. Is something wrong?"
"More than everything? No, I was just lonely. I couldn't sleep. I wanted to be with you."
He hesitated.
"Can I come in?"
Okay. She took a step back, switching the light on. He looked around, a new expression taking over.
"This is the room Kevin gave you? Why didn't you say something? You should have my room."
"I'm fine here," she assured him. "I'm not much for beds anyway. It's safer to sleep light."
"I don't know what to say. I can't sleep in a king-size bed knowing you're stuck in a storage box."
"Really, I like it." He gave her a doubtful look, which turned suddenly sheepish.
"I was going to invite myself in, but there's barely room for you."
"We could shift some crates."
"I have a better idea. Come with me."
He offered his hand. She took it without considering what she was doing. He pulled her down the dark hall, past the bathroom door, to his own room. The only light came from a small lamp on the bedside table. It was a very nice room, more in line with Kevin's usual aesthetic than her own storage space. There was a massive bed in the middle of the room, covered in a white comforter, with a rustic four-poster frame made of artfully unfinished logs. A gold blanket that matched the tone of the wood was draped over the foot of the bed.
"You see," he said, "there's no way I could sleep in here again after seeing your sad situation. I'd feel like a horrible excuse for a man."
"Well, I'm not trading. I already have my room wired." They stood awkwardly in the doorway for a moment.
"I didn't really have anything specific in mind to talk about. I just wanted to be where you were."
"It's okay. I wasn't sleeping either."
"Let's not sleep together," he said.
Then he flushed and laughed embarrassedly.
That didn't sound right at all.
He pulled her hand again toward the big bed.
"Look, I promise to be a perfect gentleman," he said. "I'll just feel less anxious if I can see you."
She climbed up on the thick white comforter next to him, laughing with him at his awkwardness and wondering privately if she wanted him to be a perfect gentleman. She reminded herself sternly that this was not the appropriate time for those kinds of thoughts. Maybe someday in the future when their lives weren't in danger, if that day ever came. He took her hand, but otherwise gave her space. They both lay back on the stacks of feather pillows. He put his free hand behind his head and looked over at her.
"Yes, see? This is better."
And it was. It didn't make sense. She was out of her secured room and farther from her other weapons, but paradoxically, she felt safer. "Yes," she agreed. She slipped the gas mask off her head and laid it beside her.
"Your hand is cold."
Before she could respond, he sat up and grabbed the blanket from the foot of the bed.
He shook it out, then settled it over them. When he lay back, he was closer to her. His shoulder touched hers, and his arm lay over hers as he took her hand again. Why was she so vividly aware of things that, in the grand scheme of survival, didn't really matter? "Thanks," she said.
"Don't take this the wrong way. I mean it as the highest compliment and not as a slight to your company, but I think I might actually be able to sleep with you here."
"I know what you mean. It's been a long day."
"Yes," he agreed fervently. "Are you comfortable?"
"I am.
Don't take this the wrong way, but I might put my mask back on at some point. It's just a weird sleep habit."
He smiled.
"Like hugging a teddy bear."
"Exactly like that, only not adorable." He rolled toward her and leaned his forehead against her temple. She could feel his eyelashes brush against her cheek as he closed his eyes. His right arm snaked around her waist.
"I think you're adorable,"
he breathed. His voice sounded like he was already half asleep.
"And terrifyingly lethal, too, of course."
He yawned. "Very sweet," she said. But she wasn't sure if he heard her. He was breathing so evenly she thought he might already be out. She waited a few moments, and then, carefully, she reached up with her free hand to touch his curls. They were so soft. Her fingers traced his features, totally calm in unconsciousness. It was that same innocent, serene face that had never belonged in her world. She didn't think she'd ever seen anything quite so beautiful. She fell asleep like that, with her hand tucked possessively around the nape of his neck, the gas mask forgotten behind her back.
Chapter 17. Kevin didn't call. Daniel didn't seem to think this was odd, but Alex thought she detected some extra strain in Arnie's shoulders. It was too long. As she'd understood things, Kevin only had to get into a position from which he could follow the one person they knew for certain was involved, Karsten. He could have made the drive to D.C. in 2 days, even taking it easy. She'd told him exactly where to find her old boss once he was there. It was only a few hours' work at most. If Karsten wasn't where he was supposed to be, Kevin should have called. What was he doing? Or had something happened to him? How long should she wait before suggesting that possibility to Daniel? On the plus side, every hour hidden helped her face. Under low wattage lighting and with a lot of makeup, she might be able to escape notice for 3 or even 4 seconds. The wait was an odd mix of boredom, stress, and the strangest kind of happiness. Doomed happiness. Happiness with a deadline. But that didn't make it less all-encompassing. She should be in a very dark place right now, the pulsing beat of the hunt filling her ears, but she found herself smiling as a default expression. It didn't help that Daniel was just as inappropriately giddy as she was. They talked about it the next afternoon while watching the afternoon news. Alex had snuck Lola inside when Arnie left to go train with the other animals. She felt bad that they had to keep the door closed on the dogs. It seemed rude. And Einstein and Khan had come with her, which made the room awkwardly full of dog. She hoped Arnie wouldn't be upset. The dogs must come in sometimes or there wouldn't be the doggy door in the laundry room. She didn't know if the dogs were usually kept outside as part of their training or as an early alarm system or because Arnie had allergies, though if it was the last option, he'd chosen the wrong lifestyle. Lola parked her floppy jowls and ears on Alex's thigh, where there would shortly be a drool situation, Alex was sure. Einstein jumped right up on the couch beside Daniel, tail waving enthusiastically at the rule-breaking. Khan turned himself into a long ottoman in front of the couch. After the program's dull opening story, focused on politics, naturally, as if there weren't almost a year to go before anything actually happened, Daniel stretched his long legs out across Khan's back. Khan didn't seem to mind. Alex stroked Lola's ears, and Lola's tail thumped against the floor. It all felt comfortable and familiar, though she'd never been in a position like this in her entire life. She'd never been so closely surrounded by living things, touching them, hearing their breathing,
let alone holding hands with a man who thought she was adorable and lethal. That he could know her full story and still be able to look at her the way he did. Her eyes moved automatically to his face while the thought ran through her mind, and she found him looking at her, too. He smiled his wide, bright grin, the 2 days stubble making him look unexpectedly rugged, and she smiled back without thinking about it. All kinds of bubbly emotions percolated through her chest, and she realized it was probably the best feeling she'd ever known. She sighed, then groaned. He glanced at the TV for a reason, but it was just a commercial.
What is it?
I feel goofy, she admitted. Stupid, bubbly. Why does everything seem so positive? I can't string logical thoughts together. I try to worry, and I end up smiling. I might be losing my mind, and I don't care about that nearly as much as I should. I want to punch myself, but my face is finally just starting to heal.
Daniel laughed. That's one of the drawbacks of falling in love, I think.
Stomach tingles again. Is that what you think we're doing?
Feels like it to me.
She frowned. I don't have any comparisons. What if I'm actually going insane?
You are most definitely sane.
But I don't believe people can fall in love so quickly. Truthfully, she didn't entirely believe in love, romantic love, at all. Chemical responses, sure. Sexual attraction, yes. Compatibility, yes. Friendship, loyalty and responsibility. But love just seemed a little too much of a fairy tale.
I never used to. I mean, I always believed in attraction at first sight. I've experienced that, and that's definitely a part of what's happening for me now.
He grinned again.
But love at first sight? Just fantasy, I was sure.
Of course it is.
Except.
There's no except, Daniel.
Except that something happened to me on that train. Something totally outside of my experience or ability to explain.
She didn't know what to say. She glanced at the TV just as the newscast's ending theme began to play. That caught Daniel's attention, too.
Did we miss it?
No, it didn't run.
And that's not a good thing, he assumed,
an edge creeping into his voice. I can think of a couple different things it could mean. One, they pushed the story out, and when it didn't get results, they had to let it die. Two, the story is about to change. Daniel's shoulders squared defensively.
How soon do you think we'll see the next version?
Very soon, if that's what's happening. There was a third possibility, but she wasn't ready to say it aloud. The story would definitely disappear if they'd gotten what they needed from it. If they had Kevin now. She thought she understood enough about Kevin's character to be fairly certain that he wouldn't give them up easily. He was smart enough to go with the most believable version of the story if the department caught him. He'd been too late to save Daniel, and after killing the Oleander, he'd gone to D.C. for revenge. He'd be able to stick to that story for a while, she hoped. She didn't know who they had doing interrogations now. If that person was any good, well, eventually Kevin would tell the truth. As much as she wasn't Kevin's biggest fan, she felt sick for him now. Of course, he could have been prepared for capture, the way she would have been. He could be dead already. Batcave or no Batcave, if Kevin didn't call by midnight, it would be time to leave. She could feel when she was pushing her luck. Well, all the happy feelings had subsided. At least, that was a sign that she wasn't totally crazy. Yet. They shooed the dogs out on the porch before Arnie was due to come back, though the animal smell would probably give them away regardless. Daniel started a meat sauce for spaghetti, and she helped with the simple parts, opening cans, measuring spices. It was effortless and companionable, working side by side, like they'd been doing this for years. Was that the feeling Daniel was talking about? The strange ease of their togetherness? Though she didn't believe his theory, she had to admit to herself that she had no explanation of her own. Daniel hummed as he worked, a familiar-sounding tune that she couldn't place at first. She caught herself humming along a few minutes later. Without seeming to realize he was doing it, Daniel started to sing the words.
Guilty feet have got no rhythm, he sang.
Isn't that song older than you are? She asked after a moment. He seemed surprised.
Oh, was I singing that out loud? Sorry, I tend to do that when I cook if I don't keep a strict hold on myself.
How do you even know the words?
I'll have you know that to this day, Careless Whisper remains a very popular song on the karaoke circuit. I kill it on 80s night.
You're into karaoke?
Hey, who says school teachers don't know how to party?
He stepped away from the stove, sauce-covered spoon still in his right hand, and pulled her into a loose embrace with his left. He danced her once around a small circle, pressing his rough cheek against hers while singing, "Pain is all you'll find." Then he turned back to the stove, dancing in place while he sang cheerfully about how he was never going to dance again.
Don't be an idiot, her mind told her as the goofy smile stretched across her face again.
Shut up, her body responded.
Daniel didn't have a voice that belonged on the air, but it was a pleasant, light tenor, and he made up for any deficiencies with his enthusiasm.
By the time they heard the dogs greet Arnie at the door, they were in the middle of a passionate duet of Total Eclipse of the Heart. Alex quit singing immediately, her face flushing, but Daniel seemed oblivious both to her cowardice and to Arnie's entrance.
I really need you tonight,
he belted out as Arnie came through the door, shaking his head. It made Alex wonder if Kevin was ever any fun or if it was just business all the time when he and Arnie were here alone. Arnie didn't comment, just shut the screen door behind him, letting the fresh, warm air mix with the smells of garlic, onion, and tomato. Now that it was dark outside and light inside, she'd have to make sure he closed the exterior door before she or Daniel went into the part of the room that would be visible to anyone watching. Anything from the dogs? She asked Arnie.
Nope. You would have heard them if they found anything.
She frowned. The story didn't run. Alex and Arnie exchanged a look. Arnie's eyes cut to Daniel's back, then returned to her. She knew what he was asking, and she shook her head no. No, she hadn't talked to Daniel about Kevin, and what his silence could mean. Arnie's eyes did that subtle tightening thing that seemed to be his only physical tell for stress. For Arnie's sake, they'd have to get out as soon as possible. If anyone connected Daniel and Alex to this house, it would put Arnie in danger. She hoped he would understand about the truck. Dinner was subdued. Even Daniel seemed to catch the mood. She decided she would tell him her fears about Kevin as soon as they were alone. It would be nice to allow him one more night of decent sleep, but they should probably leave before first light. After they were finished, and not a noodle had survived, Arnie would miss this part of having houseguests, at least. She helped clear while Arnie